Welcome back to the Broncast, the podcast all about the Ford Bronco. I'm your host, John Melton.
I'm Donnie Whiteman.
We are two Bronco enthusiasts who own Broncos, work on Broncos, and love talking about Broncos from Generation 1 all the way through Generation CS. Our sponsor for this episode is Tom's Off-Road. Tom's Off-Road has every part you need to fully restore Ford Bronco.
In this episode, we're going to be talking about front and rear differentials and axles and basically just those parts.
Yep.
And I think you had some really cool ideas on maybe also talking about where you get the parts. Are they kits? What do you get with the kits? So we'll also include that.
Well, before we get into it, what have you been working on in the shop?
Not differentials. I've been doing electric steps, a lot of them.
Oh,
I have three sets of Amp Research electric steps to install, but I got the first one done today. They're beyond cool. They completely retract up underneath the Bronco floor pan and you can't see them at all.
Yeah.
And then they come out super quick. They're quiet. You can't even hear them.
Those are pretty cool. So with the, I think it was the Rock Slide Engineering, they had magnets.
Yeah.
And when the magnet pulled apart, that's when the step would come down. Is that how Amp does it?
Yeah, they're called trigger magnets. So what's really cool is you just have all this wiring, but the magnet connects the circuit. So when the door closes, the magnet connects the two wires essentially that are wired underneath the truck. You don't have to run any wires through the door.
Okay.
Which is really cool. You just have to put a magnet on the door, and then when it gets close or in proximity, it completes a circuit. What's really cool about these steps too is you'll close the door and the steps won't disappear for a moment. And then like 2 seconds after you close the door, they disappear.
It's a little delay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they've got them now where you get two trigger wires, one for each door. So if one door is opening, closing all the other, you know, all the time, the driver door, the passenger step isn't always coming in and out.
Oh yeah. That makes sense. That makes sense.
But they're really neat. I like that they're sneaky and they're quiet.
I think I'm going to do that on my restoration project, put a set on those, you know, because it's like on my Bronco, I don't really need a set.
I feel like they're such a big bonus when you're selling a truck. You know, you've got to pitch it to your better half. And my wife, for example, she said, you know, you got to put steps on this thing. Like I have steps on my Gen 6 on my side.
Yeah.
Not on hers. They're laying on the floor behind you right there. But I think when you're selling a Bronco or you want to make it really nice, make it user-friendly, these steps are great. Even if you have like a 2.5-inch kit with 35s, the step makes a huge difference.
That is true. It's a big jump to get up into my Bronco. Like you got to kind of go hold on and hoist yourself up.
Pull yourself up. I meant to tell you that I actually got these at Tom's Off-Road, you know, which is a shameless plug for Tom's.
You know.
But the reality is they've already cut them to length for you. So they go about 1.5 inches past each door seam.
Oh, okay.
Like your door gaps.
Yeah.
And they're just the perfect size. So otherwise, if you buy them, I think anywhere else, you have to cut them to length.
Right.
You know, which is a little bit more work.
Yeah. Yeah. Which they give you the cap so you can still cap it and make it look nice. That was the original, like the first time anyone installed an Amp step. It was like for an early Bronco, they had to cut it down and do all that.
And their kit already has all that done. So
that's cool. I have been reupholstering my front seats on my green truck.
Nice.
I hate doing upholstery. Like I have realized that it's the worst project ever to have to do. So the first thing you have to do is unclip all the
hog rings.
Yeah. Which I think those came straight from the devil's anus, and it's like the just trying to get your hand in there and like, oh my gosh, my forearms are so sore from trying to do it. Then you have to re-hog ring it all back together, and then you get to like stretch the vinyl fabric over the seat. And I made the huge mistake when I was doing the upper back part. I put the seat bottom fabric on there, hog ringed it all in place. And I'm like pulling it and stretching it. And I'm like, why won't this thing go? And then I was like, oh my gosh, I put the wrong one on there. I had to undo all of that, put the right one on. It's just, because when you're looking at the fabric, it doesn't look that different. You know, it's like, They look pretty similar, and I think I just happened to grab the bottom one time and was like, okay, this is the right one.
But I learned something cool about early Broncos in covering the seats and stuff, but there are two silvers for like 66. One is the vertical stripe.
Yeah.
Or I guess those would be horizontal in 66. But they had this other one called matchstick. Have you ever seen that?
No.
Oh, yeah. So you know how big a little matchstick is?
Yeah.
Well, it looks like those stacked up vertically. So, you know, like railroad ties all the way up. And it's every inch and a half, there's a row of those. Wow. And they only came on the bench seats. So if you got like a half cab truck, it would have been on the bench seat in the front.
Interesting.
Or if you got a roadster that had a bench and then the back seat matched. But yeah, I'm getting a set of that material in.
Oh, cool.
You know, it's just rare.
Yeah.
This is kind of cool.
Yeah, that's super cool.
But you have to use the hog rings on all that stuff. You had hog ring pliers, right?
Yeah, but still. I mean, that's just to crimp them. You know, Tom's has like the kit where it comes with the hog rings and the hog ring pliers. That's just to crimp them. To get them off, like you have to clip the hog ring. And so I had one pair of pliers that I was doing, and then I switched to a bigger set, like a nicer set. And on a couple of them, I got some bolt cutters, you know, just because I'm like, oh, man.
And if anyone's not done this, a hog ring is like a staple that the ends almost touch. So kind of like an earring, and it's way thicker than baling wire.
Yes.
It's ridiculously thick.
Yes. So we're in April, coming up to Super Celebration, but I wanted to talk about a couple other events that we haven't talked about in a little bit. May 2nd through the 4th is the Mid-South Bronco Stampede in Heber Springs, Arkansas. May 6th is the 26th annual Ford Bronco Pickup Spring Swap Meet in Hudsonville, Michigan. May 17th and 18th, 10th annual May It Forward, put on by the PACC Social Club in Gardner, Massachusetts, charity for veterans hosted by the Bronco Owners Northeast States. May 18th and 19th is the Wild Horses 4x4 Roundup in Lodi, California. So some good events in May, wherever you're at. We got Arkansas, Michigan, Massachusetts, and Cali. Or if you're in Tennessee, you better be at the Bronco Super Celebration.
Oh, yeah. It's going to be huge. There's no telling how many Broncos will be there this year. I think it was 1,200 last year. If you try to bring a Jeep, they will not let you on the show field.
You bring anything else, they won't let you on the show field. Yeah, only Broncos.
Yeah, we're not just picking on Jeeps. It has to be a Bronco. You can't even like load and unload. It's like, that's not a Bronco.
Yeah.
Go get a Bronco or walk.
We have a little Toyota Sequoia, and we bring the whole family, and they're always like, nope. Can't, you know, you can't unload and unload.
You're like, but I'm John Melton.
Right. I'm like, come on, people. Don't you know who I am? Are you ready to talk about axles?
Oh, yeah.
All the axle goodness
here. I was up to my elbows in axles just a month ago. So this is fresh on my brain.
This is where it came from. So before we get into axles, differentials, all that, let's break it down. If you're watching this and you were like me a few years ago, had no idea the difference between an axle, differential, a transfer case, anything like that. So here's the really quick, high-level breakdown. So obviously, your engine makes power. That power goes from the engine to the transmission. Then it comes out of the transmission and goes into the transfer case, which then sends the power north and south. Sends it to the front, and it sends it to the back. And it sends it to the axles, which then send it east and west. So that sends the power to your tires. So you got north and south from the transfer case, east and west from the axles. And in the middle of the axle is a thing called the differential. And that there's multiple different differentials. But basically what a differential does is when you're going around a corner, it makes it so that the tire on the outside can spin faster than the tire on the inside. Because if you're cornering, your outside tire has to travel further around the corner. And so they have to travel at different speeds. And so that's what that differential does. It allows those tires, those wheels to travel at different rates, basically.
Yeah. Because so, the outside wheel is going to make a whole lot more revolutions around a left-hand turn than the one on the inside.
Yeah. And the crazy part, the thing that I never understood when I first started looking into differentials is your engine makes power, but it gets multiplied throughout that whole chain. So your transmission has gears, and I knew that, like, oh yeah, it shifts through the gears. But then your transfer case sometimes will have a gear or two, a high range and a low range. And then your differentials act as a set of gears as well. So it's like kind of multiplying that power and making it available then to the tires and so that you can drive.
Yeah, so it takes the power from the engine and puts it to the wheels through all this stuff.
Yeah.
Which are gears, basically. Yeah. So, yeah, gears and axles.
So on the early Bronco, that's what we'll mainly be talking about. What's in the front and what's in the back?
Well, in the front, you have a Dana 44. You would have a ring and pinion, which we have laying right here on the table, or what's called a gear ratio. And then in the back, you have what's called a Ford 9-inch rear end, which is a straight tube axle with a differential in the middle, which has also a ring and pinion in it, which allows the drive shaft that's going north and south to transfer the power out sideways. So it makes a 90 degree turn and it does it through a ring and pinion gear. You got your front axles, always a Dana for, you know, unless you buy something else, it should be a Dana, either a Dana 30 or a Dana 44. And then in the back you have the Ford 9-inch, which we'll talk about what's so great about the Ford 9-inch.
We're going to talk about three main differential types. You have an open differential, and that's what almost all of your cars have, and most vehicles have this, and that just allows the tires, like I said, to move freely, like the outside tire to spin faster as it's going around a corner. Then you have what's called a limited slip differential, and Ford calls this TruTrack on the Bronco. So if you were to like look up your dealer code and find out what you had, you might see a TruTrack on there. And that means that the tires can move freely, but sometimes it limits the slip. So if one of the tires starts slipping, there's like a clutch in there that will tighten and it'll actually kind of force power to the tire that is slipping. So that, you know, if you start to get stuck off-road or in some mud or something like that, then it forces the power to that wheel that's slipping. And then you have a locked differential, and there's a bunch of different ways that you can lock a differential, and this is when you hear the term lockers. A locker keeps the tires from spinning freely of each other. So you lock them in, and now your tires don't spin independently of one another. They spin the same. And so even when you're going around a corner, it'll kind of chirp, you know, burp, 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 burp.
But even those have a little like limited slip designed into them, little clutch packs. Because if you don't, what a lot of guys used to do in the 60s and 70s, and they would weld the axles together back there.
Yeah.
The ones going east and west to each tire. And then that's a problem because when you're on a crested road, your rear end will just slide off the road. It literally will not let any wheel move independently of the other. So it's actually pretty dangerous.
It is. There's our overview. Now, let's talk about why would someone rebuild their differential?
Well, usually they leak. So yeah. Broncos leak. We talk about this all the time. You can replace the main seal, which, you know, if it's a 10-bolt, it'll have 10 bolt holes in it, and the seals aren't expensive. They're under $20, but sometimes it's not the seal. It could be the outer axle seals if it's leaking at a wheel and the inside of your wheel is just covered in like grease. It's not coming from your brake. It's actually the oil's coming out of your differential along the tubes and out at your wheels on the outside. But you can replace just the outer tube seals. You don't have to mess with the differential. If you buy a set of axles and they say, oh, it's rebuilt, it could just mean that they put seals on the outside and it's not actually rebuilt. So I would call that resealed, not rebuilt.
Yeah.
So we
lightly resealed.
Yeah. We recently bought a set of axles and found out that the rear axle had been sandblasted so that they could paint it and they got sand all inside of it. So it was kind of really hard to rotate and gritty. And I didn't really feel the grit, but when we drained the oil, it was, it's like sandpaper. It had all this sand in it. And so we had to tear it completely apart. And when we did, we ended up finding out that the gears were bad. You know, the ring and pinions were all pitted and the teeth were bad. And so we got all the way down in there.
Jeez.
But, yeah. So, you know, you can, the best way to check it, whether an axle's been rebuilt or not, is to take it apart.
Yeah.
Because they could put brand new fluid in it and make it look like it was, you know, oh, it's been rebuilt. It has new, pretty red, you know, gear oil in it or whatever color it is, purple, if it's royal purple.
Yeah.
So, you know, once you start tearing into it, you know, you can check for end play and some other things.
I'd say another big reason you would change or, you know, rebuild an axle differential would be because of tire size. That I feel like is, if you're wanting to get larger tires and put big tires on your Bronco, especially on your Bronco, you have to do all the math and figure out what gear ratio then would, you know, because if you think about it, when you first bought your Bronco, it came with 28 inch radials, you know, like these dinky little tires. And so your axles most likely had 350 gears inside of them. And so if you are like me and you go to a 35 inch tire, like it's a lot bigger. So your engine is having to work harder to rotate that tire. And so if you go up, well, maybe is it down in your gear ratio? Up, the number goes up. Like to a 456, then all of a sudden your Bronco feels like you got, you know, 100 more horsepower because you got, you know, the right gear ratio for your tires and stuff like that. So I think that's another reason why you would crack into your differential and start messing with it.
Yeah. You know, like we said, it starts with a leak and then you go from there. But sometimes you'll want to change the ratio because you're going to use your truck differently. You know, if you're going to go rock crawling, you're going to want some pretty short gears. If you're going to be on the highway all the time, you're going to want some taller gears. Mm-hmm. So we call them highway gears.
And why is it that the number goes down?
I know.
It's like a taller gear is actually lower. Like it's a lower number and a shorter gear is a higher number.
Well, so like a 293 would be a higher gear because it's two revolutions of the drive shaft, whereas a 410 is four revolutions of the drive shaft.
Yeah.
So the wheels, you know what I'm saying? The drive shaft spinning more to make the wheels go the same. So the ratio, it's a little confusing at first. But we actually, Tim, my partner here at the shop, he restored a Jeep, which is how we got connected here. It's kind of a cool story, but this thing's beautiful. But when he first got it, you know, got it off the trailer, and I ended up taking three Jeeps to make one Jeep, which is pretty funny. But the first time we got it running and stuff, he took it for a drive, and he went and put it in four-wheel drive, and the front cover just exploded because the front gear ratio was different than the back gear ratio. Oh. And that was the beginning of this truck getting completely disassembled. And he had a an outboard motor gas tank for a tanks in the back bed. So we tell stories. I had a Milo's sweet tea tank. Yeah.
How many wrenches would you say is rebuilding an axle on a scale of 1 to 5?
We have to add some factors into this. First of all, the hassle factor.
Yeah.
Because your rear wheel's not going to come off to start with. You get the lug nuts off, it'll be fused on there. And that's just the beginning.
Yep.
So as long as you have like a high level of suffering or whatever it is to get through every, because, you know, once you get the wheel off, then the drum doesn't come off. You'll take a sledgehammer and smash it into a million pieces to get it off. And you have to buy new drums. But it just, and that's just the beginning.
Yeah.
But like,
that's the easy part.
To fix the leaks, like, let's say, you got to get through all that stuff to get to the seal. Then the seal's easy to replace.
Yeah.
Like the outer seals, easy. If it's leaking at the center, at the differential, that rear differential piece, the hog head, or people call it, it's a third member, that thing has the ring and pinion in it, has the carrier with the clutch disc in it, and it's like 80 pounds. You can't just pull it out to replace that seal because you have to take the drive shaft off.
Yeah.
It's a chore. I would send somebody to go have if it's leaking in the middle, send them to a shop.
Yeah.
If it's the outer seals, I would say it's a hard three.
Yeah.
Like you're going to get dirty and you're going to be under the truck.
So I cleaned out my Dana 44, like one of the first projects that I did as, you know, when I had my Bronco, because I was putting disc brakes on. And so I'd gotten all the drums off and I was down to basically just, you know, pulling out the axle, like the axle shafts. And so I was like, why don't I just clean out this axle? So then I unbolt the cover and try to get this stupid carrier out. And it's like, who, you know, like, and I don't have a, you know, case spreader or anything like that. So I'm like banging on it and just, you know, trying to get it out. It takes me probably a day to get out. And then to put it back in, you know, is just so. But yeah, I did that, you know, and replaced the seals and flushed it out and put in new gear oil and stuff like that. And I was really glad that I did it. But I would have, like, I would agree with you. Like, if you're not doing a disc brake conversion at the same time and you're just wanting to do that, I would say it's a four. Like, it's a hard three for someone just kind of getting into it. But yeah, if you're already into it with a disc brake conversion, like, it's a two to, you know, finish the job.
And then the learning curve with the front and the rear differentials are not similar.
No.
You know, in the way that you adjust the gear lash and everything else and the parts that are inside and even just getting the pinion out. But you got to get the drive shafts off. So I'd say tackling, whether it's the front or the rear, rebuilding those parts, it's a really cool experience because the gears are just fascinating.
Yeah.
And you can get these great repair kits. Yeah, I would say doing the front is a five, doing the rear is a four because of the shims.
Yeah.
And how you adjust the gear mesh. As far as outer seals go, I think anybody should tackle that. And your truck will be, well, none are going to cooperate. So it's going to be a minimum of a three in effort.
Yep.
Yeah,
yep.
Out of five, right?
Yeah. I've never done it. I've filmed people do it.
It's super rewarding to do, though, because then when you learn about when it's right, use the yellow gear mesh paint.
And, yeah.
Yeah. And then when you get it on the right number, you have to take it in and out like three or four times.
Yeah.
So you don't, it's not a one and done deal. Like, you don't just, oh, nail it the first time. When you get that on the money, then you know it's right.
I filmed Carl Strum up at Tennessee Classic Trucks. Yeah. He did my restoration project. And so I was like, can I just film this process? And like, you know, and so watched him do it. And then I just kind of voiced over talking through each of the steps.
I watched that video.
Yeah, it was a good one. It was a good one. And I just did the Dana 44. I still have the Ford 9-inch. I don't think I haven't edited it, but I need to edit that one and put it together. But he did a great job on them. So
yeah. It's as rewarding as rebuilding an engine. It's like a major deal. You know, when it's done, you've got new ring and pinions if you need them. It's just, I think it's one of the coolest parts of the truck.
So we talked about Dana 44, Ford 9-inch. Why is the Ford 9-inch easier than the Dana 44?
I tell you what it is this piece right here, this adjuster. It adjusts as you rotate it, it moves left or right, and there's two. They move the ring gear in and out of the pinion, and you don't have these on the front in the Dana 44. You have to use shims.
You have shims,
yeah,
which you have to pull out. Put re-shim, shims in, put it back in.
Which is why you have to do it so many times. But this, once you still have to pull this out to adjust these, but you can actually get the whole thing set up without having to re-shim it.
Ford 9-inches, I mean, they're super popular, not even just in the early Bronco crowd, but everyone wants a Ford 9. Like, that is a very popular thing. GM, Dodge, like, people put these in all kinds of vehicles.
Oh, they put them in race cars. They put them in dragsters. Like, it doesn't matter if it's a Dodge or a Chevy, a Camaro, you're going to usually find a Ford 9-inch in the back. Part of it is because they're easy to adjust, but that's not really why they do it. They do it because of this right here. And it's actually pretty heavy. This is has no carrier, no gears, but the pinion goes right here. Just this thing right here, which is also really heavy. Try not to smash my laptop. So the pinion goes in here, and this is supported by an inner and outer bearing that is on the outside of this housing. So there's two places that support the pinion, and then you have one more inside.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So it has three supports on it, which makes it so much more durable and indestructible.
Yeah.
So that's what's so great about a Ford 9-inch.
You can just put a lot of power into a Ford 9-inch and it's not going to go bang.
Right.
Yeah.
The pinion's not going to move around. Gears won't wear. But yeah, that's what's... And every Bronco has a Ford 9-inch in it.
Wait, does every Bronco... No. Not every Bronco. Not every generation.
Not every generation. Yeah.
All the early Broncos.
Early Broncos. Most of the... Full size, not all of them.
And I think we should mention some of the early Broncos had a Dana 30 as well, which is even more complex and has all kinds of other problems. But we're not talking about that.
There is one other difference on the rear of some of these axles. And in 78 and 79, you could get what's called a high pinion, which just locates the drive shaft and the pinion at the hog head. It just flips it and moves it above. You get like, I don't know if it's 5 more inches of clearance under the drive shaft, but that's essentially it. Yeah. There are probably other benefits, but if you look underneath a Bronco, you'll see that the drive shaft's on the bottom part of that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, a high pinion, if you get bigger tires and you get a bigger suspension lift and you drop your axle down, well, now if you have a high pinion, then your drive shaft angle isn't as steep. And so, yeah, that's definitely.
Yeah, you're less likely to wear out the U-joints and things like that. So yeah. I think 78 and 79 Broncos all came with high pinions.
Interesting.
Yeah, I didn't know that. I just found that out from our buddy Spencer.
There's some of the, you know, the tech, some of the info on rebuilding your differential. But I wanted to kind of talk about some of the parts, obviously, Tom's Off-Road being our sponsor, just kind of looking at some of the stuff that they had. Now, we talked about there are different differential options. You would go with a different differential if you were wanting to take your Bronco off-road. So like my Bronco, I have 35-inch tires and the 350 gears. I would like to upgrade to a 456 gear, which is the ring and pinion, but also add in a locker. On Tom's website, you know, you have a bunch of different options on what you could get. You could get a selectable locker, like a Yukon Zip locker, which is air engaged. So you also need a compressor. You like, and then you run an airline out of your differential or out of your axle tube, you know.
So that's an air locker.
That's an air locker.
Yeah.
Then there's the ARB air locker, which is also air engaged. And then there's the aux locker, which they have, which is cable driven. So like literally you have kind of like a parking brake cable and that will engage or shift. We talked about it, you know, the reason for your differential is to let the tires spin freely. But when you're off road and you get stuck, you want both those tires locked in, turning at the same time to help you get you up over an obstacle. So that's where having a locker comes in, and it's really handy. Also on Tom's Off-Road, they have the Yukon Grizzly locker, which is a limited slip, not the Yukon Zip locker that I just talked about. Yukon Grizzly locker. And then up front, they have a Dana 44 power lock, which is also a limited slip or a true track. And then obviously open carrier. There's a lot of different options and it can get super intimidating when you're thinking about, oh man, yeah, I'd love to change my gears, but wait, you know, there's this. There is a lot to it and you want to know the math of what you want and know, okay, if I'm driving at 70 miles an hour on the freeway, what will my RPM be with the gears that I have? But also if I, you know, I'm going off road, like what do I want, you know, my throttle response to be and that kind of thing. So it's daunting just to try to fit all the topic, you know, all of this into one podcast episode.
That's right. You know, what's funny is when we were learning, you know, I was learning how to rebuild the axles. There was this YouTube video. I thought it was like from the 70s, but it's actually from like 2000. It's a 5-part video. They're like 45 minutes to an hour each. And that's how deep he got into rebuilding a differential.
Yeah.
When we say it's a 5, we're not kidding.
Yeah.
You know, and the learning curve was the extra part. So buying an axle or just, you know, calling these companies that make the parts. And if you can buy a whole carrier, which is this thing I have over here, this that has the clutch packs and everything in it. If you can buy this complete for $600, why would you build it? You know, some of them are even less than that, but you can buy whole complete axles too, already rebuilt. Curry sells them. Dana sells them. They sell replacements. Surprisingly, they're not as expensive as you'd think. I mean, they might be $3,000 or more depending on what you're buying, but I do know that a Gen 6 axle for a rear Bronco brand new from Ford is $2,950 with disc brakes, no calipers. What was the cost on your video? You totaled it up to show how much it costs to rebuild axles, and it's not cheap.
Yeah, I forget. I want to say it was $3,000 around there per axle.
Yeah, per axle.
Yeah.
Yeah, so there's $6,000. So compare that sometimes to buying some axles that have already been rebuilt or buying new axles.
It is worth it to buy it all together and slap it under there and you're good to go.
The opposite is you go to school.
Yeah.
for a long time.
Yeah. And you might not even save a whole lot of money.
You will definitely be frustrated. But so this guy that makes these videos, he looks like Sling Blade. Uh-huh. Like, it's got no gas. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Anyway, but his videos are terrific. At the end of it, you will have your degree, but you do need to buy the kits. So we were online yesterday, I think, looking at all of the kits that Tom sells for rebuilding axles, from a seal replacement kit all the way through everything you need. Some of the kits have bearings and some of the kits don't have bearings.
Yeah.
You know, you can get Spicer bearings, which are always Dana Spicer. Always great to use those bearings, made in the USA. And then Timkins are good. But usually the kit doesn't include the bearings that you'll need to replace or the ring and pinion. And then the parts just start to add up from there. Yeah. The kit's cheap.
There you go. Bunch of axles, differentials, third members, carriers, all those words in there.
Well, I didn't hate rebuilding them so badly that I don't want to do it again, but I think I'm going to do them like three at a time, just because, you know, it's just, if you're going to get that dirty and that frustrated, you just want to get it over with. Do it all at once. Fronts and rears were easy. Ford made it really nice for you. And the Danas are hard to get the gear mesh to line up. Once you figure out the shims, and you know, you don't have to be able to do mass to the 10,000s, and the shims, some of them are as thin as a human hair. You just keep replacing the shims until you get the gears to mesh right.
Yep.
Doing the math, I've tried to do the math a couple of times. We finally just threw the pen and paper away. It's like, all right, we're just going to figure this out.
Well, there you go. Thank you guys so much for listening, and we'll see you on the next episode.